Let me go to my live line because it is always great to talk with living American history and individuals that had an impact on this country. One of those is a young man. I'm looking at his picture, and I know he still feels like he's a young man. His name is Bobby Seale, the original 1966 founding chairman and national organizer of the Black Panther Party USA. He was one of the defendants in the Chicago 7, except he was the eighth person that didn't have to be with the Chicago 7. He was involved in a whole lot of things in the 60s and the 70s. He was a negotiator at the whole situation in Attica back in the day. You know, just was involved in the progressive movement, in the radical movement, in the movement to try to, you know, end the war, bring peace and justice, curb poverty, and curb a lot of the ills in this country. He is still active, speaking out today. He will be here next Sunday as the keynote speaker for the annual Dr. Martin Luther King banquet, sponsored by the Black Student Union of IUPUI, and it is an honor and a privilege to have on our live line the one and only Brother Bobby Seale. Welcome, sir.
Good morning. Good morning. Or afternoon, rather.
Good afternoon. How are you? It's an honor, sir.
I'm doing just fine, just fine.
Let me ask you, what are you into today? I mean, here we are in the 21st century, but you're still speaking out.
Oh, yeah. I lecture a lot, quite a few colleges and universities still to this very day. And one of the main things I'm about right now is trying to get this major feature film, a drama, off the ground, not a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But I've titled it after my first book that I wrote concerning the 1960s. It was titled Seize the Time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The subtitle is The Eighth Defendant, and I was the eighth defendant in the Great Chicago 7 conspiracy trial, of course. Most young folks don't know about that 7-8 months that I was on trial there, how I was chained, shackled, and gagged to a chair for 3 different days with 3 different progressive kinds of gags trying to keep me quiet. And where I couldn't speak, you know, with a gag over your mouth, you could still muffle out, I want my constitutional rights,
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff. But it's a thing, you know. People have attempted to try to make films, mostly without even contacting me,
right,
about the party or about the Chicago 7 stuff and what have you. Then they want me to come out and support their films, and I look at their films. And I says, why you didn't call me, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I thought you were an old guy with a shaky voice. I says, a shaky voice. So I rattled off to him. I says, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for anyone to dissolve the political boundaries which have connection with another, I said, do I sound like I have a shaky voice?
So, and you're trying to finance this yourself, which means you can control what it portrays.
What I'm doing is I'm raising development funds.
Okay.
The development funds allows me to do an independent film.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it allows me to finish the script that we've already started and got largely written. It allows me to get a script breakdown, which costs money from some top-flight production manager in Hollywood. It allows us to secure an entertainment corporation. Or we got to have $100,000 just to secure one of those guys.
Right.
And we have to have the type who... who's connected with and respected by the major distribution houses and so on. So I'm saying that there's quite a few different things, including a storyboard, et cetera,
right,
and so on. So once we complete all of this, and we've already been there to talk to a couple of the houses,
mm-hmm.
and they're very interested. So once we complete all of this, then we're able to come in for straight financing of an independent film, you
right.
know what I mean?
Because
right. we're going to go in there also with hopefully some of our talent contracted, you see.
Right.
So that this way I can do the independent film and I can pull the people in. So I got a couple of former party members who are filmmakers, and I got other people who are not filmmakers who are good professionals and others who are willing to work with me on this film and so on. So we're going to produce a major high-style film on my life story, Bobby Seale, the eighth defendant. This is really Seize the Time, the eighth defendant. And it just takes me through 2 courtroom trials.
Right.
While we go through these trials, we're flashing back to how I started the party, flashing back to when Dr. Martin Luther King was killed, mm-hmm. and then I stopped riots. I literally stopped riots in one community in California out here.
Mm.
And I was on the front page of Seal Stops Riot, because I didn't believe in riots. I believed in community organizing, you know what I mean?
Hmm.
So the idea is that, and then I have to go to court on some other trumped-up charge that the local police have trumped up on me, and this kind of stuff. So the judge giving me probation. It was a misdemeanor, but he gives me probation, whatever, et cetera. My point is that you're in and out of court.
Right.
You got rallies, you got protests, and you got programs. And the programs we find out, our great adversary in this film is none other than the counterintelligence program of the FBI, headed up by none other than who? J. Edgar Hoover, head of the FBI.
I got to ask you, Bobby Seale, have you ever been able to get a hold of your file and see what was in there?
Oh, of course. I mean, we've got all kinds of stuff. In fact, half of my, what you call, Freedom of Information Act doc files, you know, they're all blacked out with names and stuff, sections and stuff. What we got a hold of was the public record when the United States Senate, with Ted Kennedy and Senator Church at the time, finally came forth to put the FBI on the hot seat. They investigated them and said, why are you running around here attacking all these Black Panthers around in the country, attacking their offices and stuff, et cetera? They put them on the hot seat for 10 days, almost 2 weeks, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what stopped all the shootouts. People don't know that. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
But I had 22 different community service programs. 45 I had organized while my friend Huey sit in jail, because Huey wasn't there when I did all this organizing.
Right.
I'm out of jail. I organized 5,000 people in 49 chapters and branches across the United States of America. Mainly what happened was is that when they killed Dr. Martin Luther King, so many young people just flooded to my organization. I mean, Fred Hampton and Mark and Bobby Rush, Rush is now a United States Congressman, flew out here to Oakland, California to get us to start a Chicago chapter of the Black Panther Party. So some of the famous chapters is none other than the Los Angeles chapter, the San Francisco, Oakland, Bay Area, Chicago chapter, Washington, D.C., but more importantly, Connecticut was a chapter, because I was on trial, and that was the second trial. But I won those trials, you know what I mean? I'm in jail without bail for 2 years, going to two different major political trials. And then I take the jail commissioner in Connecticut to federal court for violating the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America. Some guy wrote up in the newspaper, this guy is on, the DA is talking about convicting Bobby Seale and putting him in the electric chair in Connecticut.
We're talking to Bobby Seale.
He's suing the jail's commissioner for violating the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution. And I won the case.
Bobby Seale,
I'm just saying, this is high drama.
Right.
You know, it's a lot of shootouts when the FBI attack us.
Right.
And I had 28 dead party members was killed through that period of process, that particularly that year of 1969 when they attacked practically every office. I mean, we have the old film footage and stuff of John Mitchell, the United States Attorney General.
He didn't like you either.
Oh, my God, he was all on television. The Black Panther. By the end of the year, we will be rid of the Black Panthers.
Let me ask you a couple of things. When I put out on Twitter that I was going to be talking to you, somebody responded to, and I mentioned that I consider you living American history. And, you know, I got a tweet back saying, you know, how can you praise somebody that wanted to kill white people? And just a few minutes ago, you talked about that you were about stopping riots. How much of the perception of Black Panthers was the misperception by media that you all were
a person who thinks that have to read the COINTELPRO documents. Now the Senate investigation here and found out, because they subpoenaed those COINTELPRO documents, and then they become public record, and there's no blacking out. J. Edgar Hoover, they used to send out press releases to all the politicians. And this is J. Edgar Hoover's counterintelligence FBI program. And they said the Black Panthers hated all white folks. It's not true. That was in 1968.
Right.
How could we hate all white folks? And here we are running up down the street protesting together with all our white left radical buddies in the thousands. These were our friends. You see what I'm getting at? So we weren't hating white folks. We despised the oppression. And I wanted to organize people, unify people, and got them registered to vote. And we ran for political office with our names on the ballot. Because if we could take over some of those city council seats and some of those county seats and stuff like this here, we could change the racist laws and the city charters. You see what I'm getting at?
I see exactly. So why is it today that in African-American communities, and maybe it's different out your way in Oakland and out in California than it is here in the heartland of the Midwest, why is it young? Because it was young people that were the point of the spear during the civil rights movement. It was young people who were the point of the spear in the progressive movement, in the anti-war movement in the 60s and 70s. Why don't we see young people today, particularly in our community, communities of color, as the point of the spear?
Well, there are some people out there, and there's other people. But in terms of the need and levels of protest, you see, a lot of things did change. You have to remember something. When we got started in the 1960s, there were less than 50 duly elected African-American politicians across the whole of the United States of America, whether it was city council, county seat, state legislature, or whatever. Less than 50. You have to imagine that. In other words, and when you looked at Chicano people, Mexican Americans very few, Asians almost nil, and so on. So, and women and women's rights represented. Now, understand something. That was the 1960s.
Right.
We had to even go through voter registration and all other kind of things. But my point is, by the end of the seventies, by 1979. Wow, there were 7,000 African Americans duly elected to political office all across the United States of America. By the end of the 80s, it was 12,000. By the end of the 90s, it was 15,000. And now you can talk about 20,000 plus. And then you can match that with women being duly elected to political office across the country, more Mexican Americans and Chicano people. I mean, that whole Arizona thing down here, profiling Mexicans down there, boom, boom, it's all about trying to cut down and stop them from being there. And at one point, if you read the history of that whole situation with the Arizona laws trying to profile Mexican Americans, in that period, they removed 100,000 Mexican Americans from the voting rolls down there in Arizona. You see, so it's about that political electoral thing. I'm proud to say today that out of our Black Panther Party, we have two former Black Panther Party members who are United States congressmen. Congresswoman Barbara Lee, Congresswoman Bobby Rush out of Chicago, Illinois.
I knew about Bobby Rush because I grew up in Chicago. Didn't know about Sister Barbara Lee.
She worked for the Black Panther Party as a community worker. She was like a community worker with the Black Panther Party for 5 years. I first met her when she was at Mills College, and she put together a committee to elect Shirley Chisholm. And, of course, the Black Panther Party then was supporting Sir Shirley Chisholm. So we were a political party, and not only a political party, we were about the politics, and we were about the political power seats. When you have a legislative seat where you can change and make laws, that's a people's power seat. You know what I mean? So when you say power to the people, you know what I mean? You know, legislation that gives and empowers the people more so in terms of economically, politically, and social justice wise.
So is it fair to say, Bobby Seale, that leadership has
been absorbed in a lot of politicians around the country. There's a lot of progressive politicians in this country. I mean, you have to understand, when you see that the 95% of the Black vote that went to Obama, it's not just because he's Obama and he's Black.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's more than that. This brother here is progressive. Progressive in terms of constitutional, democratic, civil, human rights, economically, politically, and social justice life. That's where we're coming from. So the changing process evolves, and this is very, very important. You know what I mean? I mean, I really like this film, Lincoln.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, you have to see that he used that as a point. His Emancipation Proclamation thing was really a military tactic. You know what I mean?
Right.
One, he's going to get these Blacks to join the Northern Union Army. Two, he's going to break down the supply source for the Confederate Army because you use slavery for their supply source of goods, et cetera, and so on. So that was a military tactic. But finally, that 13th Amendment to the Constitution, he wanted to make sure that slavery didn't even exist.
Right.
So any Confederates who want to jump back up again and start trying to use slaves to supply themselves, it doesn't exist. Good. But day one from the end of the Civil War, what happens?
Right.
In Tennessee, the Ku Klux Klan is created, and in a year's time, they kill over 1,300 blacks, just walked around, shot, and killed blacks. Why? Because the Northern Union Army, at the Emancipation Proclamation, absorbed 163,000 black men to fight in the Northern Union Army. And at the end of the war, Abraham Lincoln did say, if it had not been for the black slaves who had joined and ran, we would not have won this war.
There are people listening, Bobby Seale, to us right now that all they know about the Black Panthers is they might have read about it in a history book. They might have seen some special on the Discovery Channel. What is the legacy of what you guys accomplished? I mean, here we are in the 21st century. What's the legacy?
This organization I created.
Yeah.
I'm the one who wanted it, not Huey. Huey, I got him to work with me later on, and he did do some great stuff in the early days. This organization, imagine, I'm a young man, and I am in the high-tech world. I'm working in the engineering department, Kaiser Aerospace and Electronics, on the Gemini missile program. I do electromagnetic field, black light, non-destruct testing on all engine frames for the Gemini missile program. I'd already done 4 years in the United States Air Force as a structural repairman on high-performance aircraft. So I've been in the military. I know what infrastructure and things are about. But later in life, here I am in civilian life, and I get interested in the protest movement. I go to hear Martin Luther King speak. Martin Luther King says, we're going to start boycotting these bread companies, too, because they won't hire people of color. Mm. He said, we're going to boycott them all, including Wonder Bread. We're going to boycott them so consistently and so profoundly, we want to make Wonder Bread wonder where the money went. And there I was, one student with 7,000 people in the Oakland Auditorium, standing up, giving a standing ovation to Dr. Martin Luther King, the first man that influenced me in the first place to change and try to break down institutionalized racism here in America. Now, 3 years later, I quit my job to work in the grassroots community.
Mm.
You know, I created a youth tutorial program, an educational program in North Richmond. City government 4 years ago just gave me a proclamation for creating the first youth jobs program. So people just don't know what this was about. Later, I was working for the Department of Human Resources when I created the Black Panther Party, City Government of Oakland, California. I mean, this is where I come from. I work with the War on Poverty programs. I ran the youth jobs programs. I got these kids more skills because I was loaded with skills and trades. I'm a jazz drummer, a hunter, a fisherman, a carpenter, a builder, an architect, all this stuff. And I was looking, I said, wow, I got to get these kids more skills. And that's what I did with that War on Poverty program. So my point is,
yeah,
economically, politically, and social justice-wise is rooted in humanity. And so the progressive nature of all of this kind of stuff, that's the kind of president that we have now, who is manifested in Barack Obama.
Bobby,
and so the progressive people,
right,
progressive caucus, mm-hmm, in the United States House of Representatives, they are the ones. They are the ones. We have to expand those amount of type of representatives in opposition to the old Tea Party right-wingers who are working only for the avaricious corporate money rich.
Bobby Seale, I got to ask you, is there a Black Panther solution to some of the ills African-Americans face, particularly our young people wanting to kill up each other, our young people wanting to go in our shopping malls here and just, fire a gun up in the air and shoot up in the shopping mall or have a fight as you were coming on? You heard about another school shooting close to your way down in Taft, California. Is there a Black Panther solution to stop us from killing each other?
Look, I'm going to say it this way. We need to cut down the proliferation, specifically, as it's been stated recently here, of the assault weapons, one. But there's a greater involved thing with people, mental illness, and all kind of other crazy crap, you see what I mean, that's going on. And there is no rehabilitation going on in prison systems, and I really wish we could have a real big rehabilitation program that's going on, because they're going to go to jail. You know what I mean? They're going to go to jail because they're doing dumb stuff. You know what I mean? They don't know no better, half of them. And those who think they know, you know, anyway, my point is, it's not, quote unquote, a Black Panther solution, as it's a people solution. So I want to see really what comes out of this session that they're having with the vice president and others, and what they're going to recommend there, and then what kind of programs or monies or funds is going to be set up. You know what I mean? Now, I remember the times when Republicans killed a bill for midnight basketball during the Clinton period. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
It's a lot of things that can be done in programmatic frameworks in the communities. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I organized my 5,000 people, they were 90% young folks, I'm telling you. They got in the organization. I trained them. I gave them political education. They ran the breakfast program, the sickle cell anemia testing program. They did those programs. They volunteered, et cetera, and so on. I mean, this was something. You know what I mean? It was another time and another era. And it was not about rioting. You see what I'm getting at? That's spontaneous. That's anarchistic emotional spontaneity. And the final analysis, what do we have to do? It's about grassroots programmatic frameworks that really empower the people for education and all other kind of progressive things for their lives to exist, et cetera. That's what's happening. And I still stand on that. I worked on that. I saw what I did with those youth. I did two youth jobs programs in the early days, way before the Black Panther Party ever existed, before I even conceived of it. You see what I mean? So it's not just about a quote-unquote Black Panther solution, et cetera. It's about those kinds of programs. I remember the times I took all those kids and started teaching them their African-American history. I mean, I taught them why they dropped the T-H-E-R-A-R rolling R sounds. They say, what? I said, you say dis, dat, dim, yo, mo, and fo. I said, you know what? You tend to drop the T-H-E-A-R rolling sound. And there's a history to that. And when I showed them that out of the West African languages where Black people were extracted from through the slave process, there were no T-H-E-R-A-R rolling R sounds as documented by Dr. Lorenzo Dow Turner. Dr. Lorenzo Dow Turner had done a 12-year field research, and in 1949 published a work, this African-American published a work showing that there were idiomatic expressions in surviving Africanisms in Black language in America, et cetera, and so on. Whoa, these kids loved that. They understood something. Wait a minute. You mean just the why? I said, that's why. I said, it's not that you can't learn formal English. You can. I said, but some teachers don't even know. They're running around criticizing you, saying you're speaking pidgin language. If they knew better, you know what I mean? So I started teaching teachers, too.
Right.
I used to have meetings and sessions with teachers. The black, young black kids tend to drop the T-H-E-R-A-R rolling R sound when they say this, that, them, yo, mo, and fo, rather than pronouncing it this, that, them, your, more, and for. All this kind of stuff goes to where you are now. You see what I mean?
I see exactly what you mean. He will be here next Sunday, January the 20th, at the Indiana Roof Ballroom at the 44th Annual IUPUI Dr. Martin Luther King Celebration Dinner. You need to get your ticket. To get your ticket, call him. Call the Office of Student Involvement over at IUPUI at 274-3931, 274-3931, 274-3931. He's living history. I still can't get over Bobby Seale brothers working on the Gemini program. That part of your life, that just blew me away.
Yeah, I worked that 3.5 years. 3.5 years on the Gemini missile program, engineering department, electromagnetic field, black light, non-destruct testing, also silo processing, non-destruct testing for all three stages of exhaust housing for the Gemini missile program.
And see, the reason I say that is whenever our kids see these films in school about the space program, they don't see anybody that looks like them.
Yeah, I know.
I've learned something. I know the audience has learned something. It's an honor and a privilege always when I have the privilege of talking to living history, not just living black history, but living history in our country.
Well, I'm going to be making a film, and that's what I'm about nowadays right now, this major feature film. I guess I've told you about that already.
Yeah.
But I'm going to also ask some people all across the country to actually go to the site, the Indigo site, you know, www.indigo.com projects. And you look up Bobby Seale on there, and you can support me.
So the website is www.indigo, the color, I-N-D-I-G-O?
I-N-D-I-E-G-O-G-O.
Okay.
Indiegogo.com/projects/26697
Or is it easier to go to your regular website, BobbySeal.com?
Yeah, you probably going to come out better, yeah.
Yeah, go to BobbySeal.com. BobbySeal.com. It's got a whole lot of great information.
Email me. Just email Bobby Seal. You're going to see in the left-hand corner on the index page, when you pull it up, it's going to say email Bobby Seal.
All right, we will definitely do that. And Brother Bobby Seal, it is an honor and a privilege to have you on.
Thank you.
And as we transition, hold on, because my guy Chris wants to get your contact information so we can send you a copy of what we just did, okay?
Okay.
It is an honor and a privilege. Bobby Seal, we learned some things. He helped them rockets go up, helped them astronauts be successful, and then left all of that to go out and help his people. See the history you learned that you didn't learn in school, Brother Bobby Seal.